It's July 28th, 2014, and this is episode 89 of Free to Play. Tonight, we talk about the Lich Book Club pick Sonic 3 and Knuckles. Fuck. My name is Brian Polita, and tonight I'm joined by Mark Bretschall.
I'd just like to sadly announce we have lost a grand American cultural institution. TNA Wrestling is practically no more since they lost their Spike TV television contract. And since they are pulling like 200 people to a house show and losing money every single time they did anything, they're probably going to go out of business within a week. So that's sad.
I'm sorry, what? I didn't, what?
TNA Professional Wrestling. Professional Wrestling. It was the number two promotion in
No,
in
I don't. America. I don't. That wasn't a plea for an explanation.
And what happened was
Imran Khan is here.
So I just want to go ahead and dispel the rumors that, yes, I actually did do the music for Sonic 3.
Did you?
But Sega dropped me after my weird scandals.
What was your weird scandal? And
well, I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
It's totally fine. Dave,
don't talk to children.
Oh, wait, Element OP. Dave Owen.
I am I'm here to rostify this podcast by at least 10%.
Rostify?
Sorry, nobody gets pots. 90s Simpsons references?
Pot. What's a pot?
We didn't have the Simpsons where I was living in the 90s.
Oh, come on.
I think I've eliminated all of the Simpsons from my brain after seeing that Family Guy Simpsons crossover thing.
Ah.
Apparently, like, it's a Bob's Burgers nod.
I don't know. I watched like 5 minutes. I was like, all right, Tri-State Killing Spree time, and then passed out for a while.
You said Rostify, and the first thing that came to my mind was this weekend, while lazing around, my wife put on Arthur and the Invisibles, which I don't know if you've ever seen. It's about kid in house, and like he becomes this little kind of elf person and helps battle stuff.
Great.
And then it was, yeah, there's this. I had no idea. At the end of it, it was like directed by Luc Besson, and I was like, holy shit!
Yeah, it's a Luc Besson joint.
But anyways, there's one part of this movie where they take refuge in this club, and
like a nightclub?
It's basically a nightclub, and the leader of this nightclub comes out, and he's very obviously a Rastafari, and he's got kind of the hat, and he's got dreads, and he's probably smoking right when they get there. And I immediately recognized the voice as Snoop Dogg. And that was a weird scene. That was a very weird scene, because then they all start drinking this stuff that I'm pretty sure made them all high. And then there was a dance number on a record while they were fighting. So anyway, you said Rastafari, and I immediately thought of Arthur and the Invisibles.
Which, like I said,
was a really weird Rasta scene.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, you know, like any good joke that needs intricate explanation, I could explain it, but those who watched The Simpsons in the 90s might get that. That is to say that Sonic feels much like, Knuckles feels much like Poochie, in that he is the even more extreme addition to the cast, you know, later in the cycle.
See, I have a fairly encyclopedic knowledge of The Simpsons, like seasons 1 through 10, and that was like, I don't remember what he's talking about.
Poochie is the rapping.
You don't remember.
Yeah, I remember bomb. Poochie. I didn't remember the Rastafari part.
Yeah, there's a point where they're actually designing Poochie, and one of the suits in the room says, what if we Rastafied him by about 10%? You know. So it's a very niche reference, but there's one person out there who is just rolling right now.
Yes.
A joint. Rolling a joint.
Yes.
Sonic has had its fair share of Poochies, in fairness. Knuckles, I wouldn't be the top of that list.
Knuckles probably gets high.
Knuckles doesn't deserve it. Knuckles, like, he's a good guy at heart. He means well. He gets shit upon constantly. It's not his fault that all this stuff happened to Sonic afterwards. Tails is inherently a good character.
Before we talk
There's
about
a Rasta
Knuckles
are Wait. Rasta Echidna in the Sonic comics, I believe.
No way.
He has like beads on his dreads.
Right.
Oh my god.
Well, before we talk about Tails getting shit on, I also have to introduce Matt Pierce.
So I think like Big the Cat is the opposite of Poochie. It's like, what if we took Sonic but made him way less interesting or extreme?
he's basically Snorlax, right? Just a little bit of Pokemon humor there.
I guess so.
I showed
Brian this week that there were some new Sonic Boom characters revealed.
Oh man, right. So like this is the day after we released last week's podcast, And I was talking about that, man, I wrote into Sonic, I had this idea for a fucking turtle. And then Imran sends me this like linked picture, and it's this old ass turtle, you know, with like Sonic and the, you know, the Boom Kingdom or whatever it's called, I forget.
Yeah, Sonic Boom and the something something Kingdom, but they're new characters of the cartoon, and one of them's a turtle. It was like yes,
Tommy the Turtle, right?
I don't remember.
But names. He's I'm sure alliteration because cartoon. Super old though.
Maybe he's wise.
But I guess
he's
that's the benefit. I mean, if you don't have to do a lot of muscle work, you just got to roll in your shell and you're fine.
I feel like that'd probably be the best rival for Sonic is not someone who's slow, but someone who like thinks really hard. Like, who actually, like, plans shit. Right. Like, Robotnik's fine, but Robotnik clearly doesn't do good planning.
No, he's clearly an idiot.
He's a one note. He's got one note. I'm going to get this death egg, and I'm going to put it in orbit, and I'm going to eggify everybody. And that's
he's like a dude who just saw Star Wars is like, I think the Empire's plan had flaws.
I'm going to build some robots. Fix that.
Yeah, what if I imprisoned all of the creatures in this cage and then put a giant plunger on top that would just make the walls blow off?
Flaw number one, clone stormtroopers. We'll just use animals. It's cheaper.
Well, it's
easier.
I don't know. Like maybe panic it's button. I mean, yeah. You know, like in case he messed up building this container. It's not like it was going to explode. Well, actually, I guess it did explode on it.
Well, in case he needs a lot of animals in his room at just instantly, he'll have like, this.
At literally the push of a button.
Yeah, it's, shit, I need more animals. And he just jumps on it. Right, I have a theory about Sonic and Robotnik's plan. He's taking these animals, and these tiny, fragile animals who are basically helpless. I mean, you take, like, one of these little guys and put them in Sonic's world, they're fucking dead because it's full of spikes. So he takes these little animals and puts them inside these mech suits, and they're way better off because they don't get killed by spikes anymore, they breathe fire, and they don't have to hunt for food. I mean,
they have no autonomy, which, like, it makes me wonder why he needs the animals in the mech suits in the first place. Like, are they just drawing power from them? Which is grim when you think about it.
I like that there was a second there that Mark was channeling Christopher Walken. He was like, wow, you put them on this island and they just die from spikes.
Well, Sonic lives in a hellish world full of death traps. And presumably so do the tiny little fragile animals.
Really, it was the start of American Ninja Warrior.
Do you ever think about that when you like destroy one of the enemies in Sonic 2 and like the little rabbit hops out and like straight into a lava pit?
Yeah. Right.
That little animal was a lot better off inside the mech suit. Sonic has just doomed that poor little rabbit. So
moving into like, you know, a third dimension plane that we just cannot see.
There is nothing in Sonic that doesn't want to murder you. The only like area that is not full of fire and death and spikes and lasers is the stupid human village in like Sonic Adventures, and no one wants to go there.
Green Hill Zone doesn't have any fire.
Green Hill Zone will fucking kill you.
It's got spikes. There's no lava and fire, though.
There's spikes. There's like these endless loops. A little rabbit gets caught in one of those fucking Mobius loops. He's dead. He's not getting out of that shit.
So why does he make like animal-themed robots? Because like Green Hill Zone had those bees and the fish that come to the thing. Like, why not just make like some like robots?
Well, it would make a lot more sense if like the animals. Or if, like, the animals, like, match the mech suit. But it'll take, like, a bee suit and put a rabbit inside of it. Which is weird. You think a rabbit would be more successful as a rabbit.
Well, here's a question about
job training.
Robotnik wanting, you know, animals at the push of a button. So just like Sonic, you know, kind of went for the human chick. Do you think secretly, like, Robotnik is mad?
No, I know where you're going with this.
Okay, we'll stop there then.
Yes, totally.
We're stopping you here. We're cutting you off.
It's nothing that hasn't been said before, I'm sure.
Nope. Oh, yeah, in 1,000 fanfics.
So the thing about, like, the big container of animals with, like, the big plunger on the top is the first level of Sonic 3, when you get to the boss, you beat Robotnik, the plunger, like, the big case comes from above with the plunger pointing down. Mm-hmm. So, like, he designed this container to just float above the area, and, like, if it fell for any reason, just release the animals.
Releases the animals, yeah.
Maybe he enjoys the thrill of the hunt.
Right. Catch and release program.
Yeah.
It also says that, so I guess the goal of Sonic at the end is to rescue all the animals, and all the animals that Robotnik never got around to put inside mech suits are inside the pod. I guess that's the idea. So are the animals that Sonic never got to during the course of the game, are they just stuck?
Well, right. Right. If you skip an enemy, like if you don't attack that robot that has a little fox in it, you've just that is just gonna stay in that robot suit for the rest of his life.
I assume when you kill Robotnik, there's some sort of like kill switch for the mechs, and they all just like.
Well, stop he is a cartoon villain.
Yes, that is true.
I mean, and again, we point out to that first boss Plunger, where it would just like fall if for anything went wrong.
Right. All right. So let's
talk. He's probably about not super evil.
Let's talk about Sonic 3 and Knuckles, the one that we played.
Yeah.
Did anyone actually have like their cartridge and stuff?
No.
Oh no. No.
No.
I did.
I had a Xbox 360 disc. At the compilation disc, and I found out that my Xbox 360 is now completely borked. So yeah.
I gave mine to Best Buy.
Correct. You got $300 out of that.
I did, because it was a glitch, and I took advantage, like, minutes after I finished, they were like, oh, by the way, we can't do that anymore. It's like, whatever, I got my money.
Right. Or rather, you gave your money. Oh, wait, no, that was a trade-in?
Yeah, it was supposed to be $100 for some glitch, like, 300% higher than it's supposed to be.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
So Sonic.
Yeah. So how did people play it?
I played it on an emulator.
Assuming that, right. Of course, we all own copies of the game.
Yes, I own physical copies of the original Sonic 3 and the lock-on cartridge, as well as the original design dock. Therefore, you can't sue me, and you can't prove otherwise.
Yeah, that still doesn't make it legal.
Yeah.
It just makes it less immoral. But I mean, come on. At this point, we've all owned Sonic a million times over.
Yeah.
I think I had the game on the collection disc on GameCube. One of them.
I think I've had it three different times and just like lost the cartridges along the way. Because it's been 20 years.
Right? Yeah.
This was funny for me because I grew up on a Sega Genesis. Like that was the you know, one of the first ones we had. All my other friends had Nintendo. What?
Good man.
Oh, okay, cool, good.
I and saw so, an American right there. Even if
so, I as a kid, I grew up as mostly a Sonic fan. I mean, I played Mario and I liked Mario and stuff, but you know, it was my gaming system was Sonic. So, and it's just been funny kind of seeing the fluctuation of Sonic hate throughout the years of growing up. Like after that point, because I didn't play many Sonic games up until probably. Oh god, what was the first Wii one?
Adventures 2?
No.
Oh no, the Wii one, not GameCube.
Sonic and the Secret Ring.
I think I dabbled in that briefly. It didn't quite catch me. And then I didn't play any until Sonic Generations and then the racing one, Sonic Racing Transform, but that doesn't really count. And it, like I said, through that, it's been funny just seeing all the Sonic kind of hatred, and of course the Sonic, you know, 2006 playthrough of just the worst fucking game in the world. So this was interesting, kind of going back to and feeding off the nostalgia a bit for me because I enjoyed it. I like that game. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, and I liked the Genesis Sonic game when I was a kid too because I didn't have a Genesis until 95, pretty late in the generation when they were like fire selling them because the 32 X bomb and the Saturn was coming out and all that stuff. So my friend had a Genesis and I'd go over to his house and like every time a new Sonic game would come out, we'd go crazy and beat it. And at the time I liked Sonic, but I couldn't help but feel that game was worse than Sonic 2.
Like Sonic.
And I could.
Wait, which Sonic? Sonic 3 or
Sonic 3.
Okay.
And I couldn't put my finger on it because I didn't really understand game design and things like that. And I played Sonic 3 a couple of times since then, but this is the first time I've actually like played it with a critical eye, and I don't think the level design in that game is very good.
No, it's not. It's the levels are too big, and there's too many areas where you're just watching things happen as Sonic goes through a bunch of loops, and that's the most infuriating thing.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of elements where they introduce like weird new platforming mechanics and don't explain a single one of them.
Like the Sandopolis zone or whatever.
Sandopolis is the worst level in any game.
In any game,
I like it. In any game,
I don't think it's the worst. I don't think it's the worst. It's on the Mount Rushmore of bad video game levels. It's not the absolute worst, but it's
whenever I think of Sandopolis, I think of that section with like the slants with all the sand running through them, the sand tunnel areas, and like being stuck there forever because there's a certain kind of jump you have to make.
Yeah, they never explain that jump, and you're just sitting there waiting for the ghost to appear and eventually kill you. So I spent like 5 minutes on that thing, and I don't get like timeouts on Sonic games because, generally speaking, Sonic levels are kind of short. Like, I got 3 different timeouts just trying to get through Sandopolis. Like, yeah, 10 fucking minutes on that level.
The time limit is a little bit weird. It feels like they're holding on to something from the earlier games that just don't really – it doesn't really belong, especially when, you know, you're talking about level design. I mean, this game almost always – every level has 2 ways through it, an efficient route and an inefficient route. And the inefficient route is always more about exploration. Sometimes the inefficient route results from you getting shunted all the way back to the beginning of the level. So timers just seem really out of place. There are some levels where, yeah, I struggled to get through them, and I would end up stuck at a – you know, at an impasse, just a place where, oh, I can't get any further than this, then I would finally figure out what I was doing wrong and get the more efficient path and get through the area. But yeah, right. I don't know why the timer's still here.
See, I don't have any problems with getting through the levels, but the actual act of getting through the levels was kind of boring sometimes. And when it wasn't boring, it was I don't want to use the word unfair, but there'd be situations like, oh, I'm just gonna jump up and grab that thing. Whoops, there's a spike a spring right next to it, and now it's launched me all the way to the rest of the level, so I guess I'll just keep going, or, you know, I'll make this blind jump and then I'll get hit, which it's never fatal, but it's always like, that's really stupid because this game is simultaneously encouraging me to go faster while making it so I can't. Like, it comes down to pure memory, which is, there's a lot of platformers that rely on memory, but I feel like Sonic relies on it to a point where the controls and improvisation that you can do if something goes wrong aren't they don't work as well.
Well, it's a weird thing because the hidden spikes and the hidden springs go against everything that Sonic should be, which is just like pure speed. And if they're going to make a game where you're basing everything off memorization, that needs to not be something that's supposed to be completely skill-based, which is what you'd think Sonic would be. Because it's just fast. You want to keep your momentum up. You want to be able to improvise through these levels. But there's just so many times with these basically completely unavoidable traps, like the first time through, and you can't improvise at all. You're just completely boned if you don't know exactly what's going to go on.
Like, the one that really annoyed me was when it was on the second level, and there was like a loop-de-loop coming up, so I did the spin thing to gain up some speed, and then right after the loop-de-loop, or was it before it or something, there was a spring right hidden in the ground.
Yeah.
And there was no way to see it, and it like popped me up into an enemy. And I was like, wait.
There's no reason for that to be there. It's just that's a fuck you from the developer. You know?
Like, I guess it's supposed to be like, oh, well, the player will know.
It's an old style of design. I mean, there were plenty of games that did that. I mean,
there were. Yeah,
I think like what Sonic's doing
not that that makes it acceptable, but you kind of have to frame it in its age.
Yeah,
they're of the belief that you can take a hit because you're always going to have rings.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not that big a deal. But at the same time, it's like, well, I just got these 50 rings, and right there was a goalpost, and you just kind of fucked me out of those. So that's annoying.
Are there any other games that have done a health system like that?
Well, a lot of first-person shooters now. As long as you can find a place to get cover, you can recharge.
No. I'm not talking about waiting to get. I'm talking about like having to go collect, you know, your health back or something.
Well, kind of Mario. I mean, as long as you have like a mushroom in Mario, you're fine.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like recollecting your health, I'm not sure.
Yeah, like Ghosts and Goblins, you could pick up the armor again. But yeah, specifically, you drop it, you pick it back up. I mean, nothing's coming to mind from me.
Yeah. Mario 64. Kind of had that in the water levels, as long as you could, as your health was the same thing as your air in Mario 64. Right. So as long as you could get to like the surface of the water somewhere,
yeah, still
you could recharge your health.
Yeah,
still.
And there's like a set of, I don't know if there's a set amount, but there's definitely a limit to like how long you can keep hold of like the same ring, because there are definitely bosses in Sonic games where, you know, immediately start off getting hit. And it's like, well,
I need this one ring.
You go and you get that one ring and you just keep getting hit. So after the third time, the ring just says, fuck you, you're an idiot, and just falls through the level and you can't get it.
So I actually didn't have any problem with any bosses in that game until the end. Like, I got to the one you were complaining about was the Lava Reef boss.
Yeah, that was just like, enormously frustrating.
It's so easy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I remember all these things being incredibly difficult when I was a kid, and then I go do it now, and it's like, oh, I beat the Mecha Sonic on the first try. I've never done that before.
Yeah, when you say going back to old games like that, it seems like all the pattern-based bosses are way more obvious now.
Yeah, you say the Lava Reef, are you talking about the Robotnik on Lava Reef?
Yeah, Robotnik, yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay. I mean, that's a challenging platforming boss, but there's literally a fire shield right above him as you're coming down.
Sure, but you still get hit by the bombs.
Oh, I mean, I guess I just figured out the timing on it like the second time.
Yeah, well, I could never get the timing right, and like whenever I tried to like jump above the bombs, like I would get hit. Oh, scream by the bomb, just coming out of the air and hitting me on top of the head.
Yeah, I loved all those new shields and stuff because Sonic 2 didn't have those, right?
No,
it
was new for 3.
Sonic 1 just had shields. Yeah,
right. It just had
the
a shield,
active shields with the abilities like the fire charge and stuff.
Yeah, though that bonus shield game where you're like you're in the slot machine, not like the one where you're like bouncing up and like hitting the thing to make the capsules drop, that was always really annoyed me because it's really hard to get the one you want without grabbing the one you don't on the way down.
right.
So like the lightning or bubble ones are really useful in the second level, like especially right before Robotnik. But I do that, then I'd immediately get flame, and since you start right from that place, like underwater, it automatically just cancels out.
Lightning shield owns.
The bonus levels could actually punish you in that way. Like the jackpot bonus levels in Knuckles. Like if you hit the wrong jackpot, a bunch of spikes are going to come and take away all your coins. It's like, I'm being punished for finding this secret area. That is
gambling.
Yeah,
it's gambling. I guess I
deserve it. And you can always just hang out there and get all your rings back.
Yeah,
it's just depends on the... Yeah, just your own sick, bloody-minded determination.
Yeah, I was always really bad at the 3D bonus worlds.
Yeah, I didn't get a single Chaos Emerald.
I didn't get one for a long time.
The ones where you're going down, like, the pipe, the tube?
No, that was Sonic 2.
Oh, yeah.
Sonic 3 had the ones where there were those small spheres.
Oh, right. It's like a game levels. Of Snake or whatever.
Yeah.
I got pretty good at those.
Like, I could get, like, 10, down to 10. And then the last, it would be going so fast, I would always miss the last couple.
Yeah, it would be like the last one is just like, I may have like, I get paranoid and I start like twitching too early or twitching too late.
Yeah.
And suddenly messing
you
got to
get your Pac-Man timing down on that one because it's on that one, it's not about hitting left at the right time. It's about holding left before you get to the right part.
Yeah.
It's weird that was like so far removed from, you know, like the actual game itself. Like I would have loved a sort of like speed only level. And maybe you just have to like time your jumps or go to a different path if you know you.
I don't know. Sonic has always been weird about bonus games like that, especially in the 2D games.
Yeah.
Are like, oh well, here's the weird thing that we just we want to show off this engine we just made.
Do you ever get to a bonus level in Sonic 3D Blast?
No.
God no.
It's this weird thing where you're on a suspension bridge over a lava pit, and it's kind of impressive, like parallax and scrolling for the Genesis, but it's awful to play. Like it's really weird.
That's kind of like a good description of all of the Sonic bonus levels, except for like the first one. It's like this is really impressive for the Genesis, but it is god awful to play.
I don't know. Well, I guess maybe it's because I grew up with it and played it a shitload, but I like the Sonic 2 bonus.
Sonic 2s were fine unless you had Tails. Then it became the most infuriating thing of all time.
Well, Tails would do this stupid thing where like he would get hit and then he'd wind up in front of you. And if that ever happened, you were done because there's no way you could get the coins back before he got blown up.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck Tails.
Yeah, but you could always just play without him and just like Tails just you add nothing to this experience. Just go over
Sonic
there.
Sonic 3 and Knuckles, man. That's Sonic 3 and Tails.
Yeah, my problem was I started my save with Tails, and then once it started, you can't get Tails off. So the whole freaking game, I got Tails stealing my air bubbles left and right.
He did that to me too.
This might be the first game that I remember. Like I became obsessed. Like I saw something either in a magazine or something with like how the fuck do I achieve? How do I attain this supersonic, this megasonic where he turns white and his hair spikes up? And it just amazed me, blew my mind. Like, I want this superpower Sonic. How do I do this? How do I get this in the game? And like, you know, I saw hints of it in magazines and, you know, I would dial up to the internet and, I mean, that was later on, of course, but
do you know how you got it?
You get all the Chaos Emeralds in Sonic 3, then you have to get them all again in Sonic and Knuckles.
No, you get a Game Genie, and you put in the code, and you walk, and you go along with the rest of your
friends. Adding, making it a total of 3 cartridges stacked in your Genesis.
You've got your Gen 1 Sega CD, you've got your Gen 1 Genesis, you've got your Master System Converter, you've got your 32X plugged into that, you've got your Game Genie, your X-Band modem, your Sega Channel modem, then you've got Sonic and Knuckles, then you've got Sonic 3 on top of that.
So let's talk about a little bit how this game existed, because it was originally all one game.
Right,
yeah. And to the point where everyone now considers it one game, but Sega, for reasons, business reasons, and
they
knew
they'd have to split it.
Yeah, they split it, so...
Because it would have been so freaking big if they would have like just kept it one game. It would have been like, what, 18 levels, 24 levels, yeah, something 16, like that?
It's 16 zones, I think.
Total between both games? Okay. Yeah.
Like, if somebody did that now, no matter the reason, people would riot.
Would they, though? Because what would happen now? It would happen what they early did with
access.
Sonic 4.
Just chalk it up to early access.
No, you would just buy the original game, and you have to buy the levels for 99 cents. That's what happened to Sonic 4.
Call it episodic.
Yeah.
Episonic.
So maybe, my God.
Hate.
So maybe, like, this, like, Sonic and Knuckles was, like, the earliest form of DLC in a video game.
I mean, it kind of was, but I feel like I guess their saving grace was they never announced it as one game, or maybe they did, because who knows back then.
Yeah.
Well, but if I remember correctly, Sonic 3 and Sonic & Knuckles came out within the same year.
Yeah. Oh, I think it was within the same year, or just like 1 year?
No, it was
February,
the same year
in October. Yeah, same
okay.
year.
Okay. So I think that would have pissed off my parents if I had, like, okay, now I need this new Sonic game.
Oh, it definitely pissed me off, because it was like, games were freaking expensive back in the day. We're talking like $67 for this garbage. And you're telling me that I'm buying half of the game and I have to like get this wonky lock-on thing, which I know, Sega, this is not going to work very well. So, yeah, it was kind of annoying. And then you take a look at the actual like Knuckles levels where you wind up with stuff like Sandopolis. And that, like, it doesn't even match like Sonic's art. It doesn't match Sega art. This is like they got the guys responsible for James Pond to do this level for them. It makes no sense. James, I think it is hideous. Nothing there matches. It's like the mid boss is this.
What are you talking about again?
Sandopolis.
I thought the part where Sonic rappels down the sand tower stuff was pretty cool looking.
Yeah. Well, it was. Go ahead.
Let's not forget that Sandopolis is the level where Knuckles shows his true colors. He is a terrorist. He bombs a building in that level. He destroys a tower.
Like, I never got like what exactly the storyline was.
People.
So Robotnik was doing evil things, and to distract Sonic, he tells Knuckles that Sonic is trying to steal the Chaos Emeralds, and Knuckles is an idiot.
Okay.
Well, more specifically, he tells Knuckles that he's trying to steal the Master Emerald, which is the emerald that keeps the Angel Isle afloat.
Right, and like
when actually Robotnik is trying to siphon power from the Master Emerald and steal it for his own purposes.
I think this emerald shit is where Sonic just went off the rails.
I mean, it's always been about emerald shit.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the emeralds in the first game were just these collectibles. Like, you never really needed them. In Sonic 2, you had to get all the Chaos Emeralds in order to unlock Super Sonic and find the real ending. And I think at that point, everything just went to shit. Because now we're adding lore into this series, and the lore was god-awful.
So here's something I did not know that I'm reading in Dave's prepared IBC document, that Michael Jackson worked on music for Sonic 3 at some point, in some vague degree or something, and like something happened because I guess it was during...
Oh, is that why you expressed confusion at my opening?
I was going to say that was Imran's
reference. What was your opening? What?
I made the music for Sonic 3 because Michael Jackson did make it.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's presumed. There's a bunch of evidence insisting that he made it, but
I did not put two and two together because I had not read that far when you had said that. So
there was apparently like, I don't know if it's in Dave's document. I have it open in front of me, but the reason he didn't actually go through with it is because he couldn't get the Genesis hardware to do what he wanted to do. Yeah. And also because there was a bunch of shit about him touching kids.
It's one of those he said, she said kind of things. You know, Jackson's camp says, well, the Genesis hardware couldn't do what I wanted it to do.
Well,
and, you know, Sega says, well, he was never really involved. I mean, he was involved and he wasn't.
Well, okay, so if he says, like, the Genesis can't do what he wanted to do, then explain Michael Jackson's Moonwalker and why he went ahead and signed off on that.
Well, I think he was trying to be more ambitious than with Moonwalker. Yeah. Moonwalker started as an arcade game, too. So,
but I think the thing is that after Moonwalker, that's when he said, you know what, I actually take a crack at this instead of letting some other company take my music and bastardize it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's an interesting read. You know, I kind of just did a, and we should probably put these show notes online for people if they care. But, you know, I did a sort of a summary. But the mini boss music that was in Sonic 3, which is no longer in Sonic 3 in modern versions like the Genesis collection, actually contains samples of, you know, come on and in the mini boss music.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. It's in music. So
were there like released copies that have Michael Jackson's samples in them, or were they all pulled before they launched?
All the carts and probably, you know, the initial like PC release from way back, which you can still find in some places on like a regular CD. I imagine that has it all, but I think everything modern and maybe even the GameCube, I'm not sure, but everything modern has it removed.
Yeah. Well, and the 16-bit days of where Sega just going like, it's the Wild West, we can do whatever we want. Like, that, what was it, Shinobi 3?
Two.
With, like, Batman and Spider-Man and...
Godzilla. They had Godzilla in there. Yeah.
They're just like, whatever. We're gonna do what we want. No one's gonna care.
That went on for a while, yeah. That went on for a while in games in general. But, I mean, Hydrocity Zone, Carnival Zone, Carnival Night, those are two that his people or the people who were working with him at the time say absolutely... Those are his compositions. Sega says any resemblance to Jackson's early demos is coincidental, yada, yada.
Yeah, they don't want to give money to Jackson the estate.
Right.
I just want to read Dave's write-up for Tales in this verbatim. So here we go. A fox born Miles Prower. Miles Prower, get it. Somehow flies by spinning his dual fox tails. Generally a fuck-up who gets in the way during gameplay and steals my goddamn air bubbles.
Dude, Tails lives a life of constant torture because he's constantly getting beat up. He's constantly getting drowned and he just dies in the boss levels. But he keeps coming. He keeps coming back.
He'll occasionally hit the boss one more time for you, and that's why you keep him around.
Yep.
Like once out of every 10 times.
Yeah.
Somehow his tail stays sticking out in the same direction when his body is spinning.
Yeah, somehow. It's magic tail. Magic Tails.
Detached. Magic Tails.
So I actually like playing Knuckles more in that game than Sonic by like a wide margin.
Yeah.
Because it feels like, I don't know, he has a more slower, deliberate pace, but also I just enjoy smashing the things with the Knuckles.
Yeah.
And the glide.
And maybe you could get to those areas, but I always felt like there were, you know, certain more exploration options, being able to, you know, scale walls and stuff.
I think that's definitely the case in Sonic 3 when they designed the game to have Knuckles. I think when you lock it down to Sonic 2, then it's just like, well, there's not a whole lot of extra stuff here, even though I scaled this wall.
Yeah. you're just finding broken places that they never intended you to get to, you know, where they didn't make the full art.
Man,
just
I remember in Sonic 1 doing like the debug code entry where you could then just switch work and just like place a billion rings on the screen. Sorry, just a weird aside. You said Sonic was there.
I actually used the level select cheat code because I didn't want to replay Sonic and Knuckles as Sonic.
Yeah.
So I just went straight to the death egg. And I still remember that code. You get on top of like a swinging rope thing in Angel Island Zone and hit left, 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 right, 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 up, up, up. Then you hear a ring sound. Ding! And that lets you get to level select. But I went to the death egg and like, that boss really sucks. A lot.
Yeah, the last guy.
Yeah, because you have no rings, so you have to do everything perfectly.
Zero rings. Yeah, that boss is pretty crazy. Actually, my son was watching me play that boss earlier today because I just had to take a timeout on Death Egg, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to knock it out. I got 20 minutes, and he was cheering me on and everything, and I finally did it, and I was like, oh, one of the most frustrating boss fights that I've had in recent memory. But I don't play 16-bit, you know, platformers every day, but yeah, super frustrating.
Yeah,
you know what's weird is that game has a weird, like, it's very indulgent sometimes in its own cinematics. Like, the initial intro is maybe like 20 seconds long, but it's still 20 seconds longer than it needs to be. And it's unskippable. And for the Knuckles boss fight, you have to go through that same cinematic of, like, going up to the top of the Angel Island and getting caught by Robotnik and then Mechasonic destroys Robotnik, and that's like, well, that took way too much time. Like, why can't I just start at Mechasonic?
And oh yeah, that sets you up perfectly for like the entire rest of the Sonic collection of games afterward.
Yeah,
because I mean, what was the next console release after that? It was 3D Blast, and then 3D Blast on Saturn.
Well, the 3D Blast wasn't really their Sonic. That was made by some American Traveler's company. Tales. Yeah, it was garbage.
Oh, was it really Traveler's Tales?
Yeah,
early Traveler's Tales.
So the next one, like, they didn't do anything for the Saturn. So the next one actually had been Sonic Adventure.
Yeah.
Unless you're kind of like, I don't think they had any, like, Game Boy, like, Advance games in the meantime.
No. So yeah, it had been Sonic Adventure. The only Sonic games they made on the Saturn was what? Sonic R and Sonic Crackers?
There's Sonic Jam. There was a fighting Sonic game.
Yeah, Sonic Crackers never came out in the US. Sonic Crackers was a Mario Party.
Sonic Crackers?
That was Dream. No, that's Sonic Shuffle.
Sonic Shuffle was the Game Gear racing game. Somewhere Ryan Bloom is screaming at his speaker.
Oh, shit.
Sonic Shuffle was totally the Dreamcast Mario Party.
Okay. So what was... Sonic Drift was the Game Gear racing game.
Oh, wait. No, never mind. Sonic Crackers was the prototype where they eventually cannibalized it and turned it into Knuckles Chaotix.
Knuckles
Chaotix
existed.
32X.
Yeah.
There was one Sonic for like a Saturday morning Sonic game. That like it looked pretty okay, but it didn't look like Sonic. Which I think that's part of the problem with like Sonic as a series is that it's very hard even today to define what Sonic is. And there's the like we talk about Ryan Bloom. He's of the firm belief that Sonic is like a race forward and be really... He thinks it's F-Zero GX, and that's a perfectly valid opinion.
Quick reaction times.
Yeah. Like, it's that kind of game. It's but he holds up Sonic Unleashed as probably the best Sonic game of the modern era. Hmm. And it's like, well, I...
Above generations?
I like Sonic as a platformer, as a good platformer, and that's rare, too. So... What? I don't like the rush forward Sonic games that much.
Yeah, I think the Sonic games that we liked... are probably gone forever.
Like I don't know, because like that's the weird thing about Sonic is if you don't like a Sonic game, wait a minute, because they're going to make one that's entirely different soon. Whether or not it's going to be good is a totally different question.
Yeah, well, I mean, oddly, it's kind of like Mario in that way. You know, they have a bunch of different balls in the air, and if you don't like the one that lands in your lap, wait for the next one. You don't like this 3D thing? Okay, here's an RPG. You don't like that? Here's a 2D platformer.
You don't cel-shaded Link. Yeah. Wait for the next Link.
Yeah.
I wonder though if Sonic 4 kind of burned them out on ever doing another like 2D Sonic. Like I think there's a lot of room for them doing like a real throwback to 2D Sonic a lot if they wanted to do that. But I don't think this company is capable of doing it or do we want them to do it.
Here is the problem with making Sonic games. It's that when you make a game like Sonic 4, you're not making it with enough production value that you can sell it at retail, so that inherently limits the number of people that will buy it.
Yeah.
When you make a game like Sonic Generations, you make it with enough production value that people will buy it at retail, but that raises the development cost and workload so high that making that game is a huge investment. But, like, when you look at Sonic Generations, that game has so many goddamn art assets that they end up just repeating a lot of that stuff.
Now, it should be noted that this never stopped Nintendo, because Nintendo never stopped making high production value 2D platformers. Now, I don't know if
that's Nintendo.
But... Yeah, I mean, they have the people to do it, but they never stopped doing it.
And that's, I mean, Sonic Colors is probably, like, Nintendo audience responding to that kind of platformer. But I know a lot of people who dislike Sonic Colors a lot because it's not the kind of Sonic game they want. And to make the rush forward Sonic game requires more than I think Sega's willing to throw at that series.
Now, is there like anything in like the indie development community that has approached that thing in Sonic that we've seen?
Action Hang.
I think of?
Action. Okay. Well, yeah, speed-wise, you have all these infinite runners that are so popular.
Cannibalt, I guess.
Cannibalt, Bit Trip Runner, all these, you know, these games, I think sort of the essence of those games is harkening back to got to go fast, you know, quick reaction You're time Sonic. Slow.
There's a Sonic Infinite Runner and it's terrible. It is. I want to say it's free to play as hell, but I don't know if it actually costs money. Like I might have just downloaded it when it was like on sale for free as iOS games tend to go.
Yeah.
But it every time you die, it just basically pushes in your face, like, hey, you should download this thing that lets you start right where you're... It only costs $2.99. Come on, do it. Like, no, go away, Sonic.
Go away, Sonic.
You're too slow.
Yeah, but so nothing like...
Yeah.
Like, actual level design.
No,
like
not... Explosion. I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty, you know, fairly deep into the indie scene, and it just doesn't, I don't hear a lot of people citing Sonic as one of their major influences for platformers. And you got people citing, you know, Spelunker and like weird Amiga platformers as Jumpman and all these weird like Amiga and Commodore 64 platformers as being like huge influences on them. But I don't see many people who say, yeah, Sonic 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles, huge influences on my style.
Yeah. See, actually, you know, I wonder if the reason for that is because the people who are really influenced by Sonic and have the talent to make games still really love Sonic. So they end up in the Sonic hacking scene and they, you know, they make Sonic fan games and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's probably
like
true.
The people like, who is that? Taxman that does like the really high quality Sonic ports. Like if he wanted to, he could probably make his own Sonic like game, but he's satisfied, you know, supporting these games for Sega as high quality as he can.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a character and a universe.
Lifestyle.
Yeah, a lifestyle. It's definitely a lifestyle. It's hello. It's a character and a lifestyle or a universe that demands the loyalty. It's not necessarily a game type that demands loyalty because it's transcended the 2D platformer roots into all these different, you know, all these different formats. So yeah, I think you're onto something there. They love Sonic, so they work on Sonic fan games and translations and all that kind of stuff.
That was the Sonic Police. They were
looking for Knuckles.
Looking for Knuckles.
I like how quickly Knuckles just went, "Oh, that was a misunderstanding. Let's all be friends.
Let's work
from
together
now on forever."
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's Sonic.
Sonic 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, great game. Overall, start to finish, two great games. Put them together into one great game. A lot of people say top 10 ever. I'm not going to go that far, but I really enjoyed it. I did
just
the whole playthrough.
If I had to rank them, they would be at the bottom of the list. Like,
really? Below like Sonic 1? And
I actually really like Sonic 1. I believe Sonic 1 is like the second best Sonic game. Like, the best one was Sonic CD. I really love Sonic CD. Maybe
good game.
Yeah,
I think it had a lot of good ideas. I'm not sure about the actual act of playing it.
It's really complicated for what it is. But I think like it had so many great big ideas and stuff that's never really been touched on before. That it's the top. Like,
I mean, that's Sonic's thing. That's like let's try and innovate in this space as best we can, and we'll make like a gimmick for every level, and that gimmick will be something that no one's ever done before. Yeah. And then at some point, that became like its biggest albatross. Yeah. Like, why the fuck did Sonic Heroes have three characters? What was the point of that?
Yeah, and then that same issue kept them from ever touching Sonic until the Dreamcast. But I had a theory today just thinking about this. Sonic CD is the most Sega game ever made. It's on this really weird peripheral that hardly anyone ever bought. It has amazing music. It has the best developer that they ever had working on a Sonic game. Like, you're not... It is peak Sega.
Talk about Naoto Oshima?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is my favorite Sonic game. Sonic 1... my big issue with Sonic 2 is it's just too short. Like, I got Sonic 2 for Christmas one year. Actually, for my birthday. I snuck and got it out of my mom's closet after she bought it for me and beat it inside of, like, 3 days. So, it kind of soured me on Sonic 2. I just never liked Sonic 2. And Sonic 3 and Knuckles just had so many weird elements to it that I never really enjoyed it. It's like there's so many just inexplicable platforming elements in those two games that they never really bother explaining until like the fifth time you die because of it. Famously, the drum, vertical drums. The barrels. They never explain anything. And like,
so, show of hands, like, we all got stuck there once, right?
Yeah.
In childhood.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Totally.
I was like, okay, I should jump up so I can get more momentum. And it's
I was
like,
convinced you needed tails.
Momentum
like,
killed.
Yeah. Like, there's some, like, getting stuck there meant you need tails.
Yeah, and yeah. For months, I just said, well, I guess I'm never going to play this again. And I think I finally got a magazine to tell me how to get through that stupid section. In Sonic and Knuckles, there's this one area in the second level, the airship zone, where you have these propellers. And On you're supposed to grab all the propellers and they fling you to the next propeller. And I just assume because, you know, you're going back and forth on propellers, your direction of being where you're being flung, it depends on your positioning. That makes sense to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong in this. No, it's entirely dependent on where you're pressing the D-pad, and the positioning of the propeller means absolutely nothing.
So that's Sonic 3's biggest weakness overall, is that how well you play that game depends on how easily you interpret everything they want you to interpret.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like if you can like identify, oh, I know what this does immediately, then you're great, you're fine. But everyone's gonna have one or two of those things where like I didn't realize that this is supposed to be this, so I ended up losing a lot of time or getting stuck here for a long time.
And yeah, I don't
that's
know
why I. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's why I actually liked Sandopolis, because I got it the first time through. I don't know what the ghosts do, because I only saw them for 30 seconds for my whole run through. You know, so I got it right away, and I understood, and I was like, okay, it's one of these, and, you know, ended up liking the level, whereas I can get that most people who don't hate it.
Yeah, Sandopolis was bad for me, specifically because, like, of the areas where they never bother to explain where you need to go and you're kind of just wandering around. But it's something where I'm not sure if it would happen in modern gaming, because now if you just landed on one of those little drum things, it would tell you push up or push down. And you would actually feel kind of stupid about it, because say, well, why is this even here if you have to explain it to me?
Actually, no, you wouldn't even need that. They've been doing tutorials like this in 2D games forever. What you do is you put one of those like belt spinners beforehand, the ones that make you run off really fast instead of spin dashing.
Yeah.
And this put one of those right in front of one of those barrels so that you just run right onto it.
Yeah. The barrels suffer. I mean, there are places, almost everything we're talking about are places where a more skilled or more refined level designer would have given you a way to learn that prior to encountering the mechanic.
This is a story
early days, like, you know.
There's a story in Mario 3D World, about development of Mario 3D World, where one of the character designers came up with an idea for an enemy. It was like, okay, I really like this enemy. And he took it to Miyamoto. Miyamoto was like, I like the idea, but make it on fire or have spikes, otherwise people aren't going to know what it does. And so they did, and I feel like that's something Sonic lacks. It doesn't have that like immediate visual indicator of a lot of things.
I think like the people responsible for the Sonic games, and this happens a lot in development, they're so focused on the game itself and they know everything about that game that it never strikes them that someone coming in fresh would have no idea what's going on. There's no real level design, and there's no real quality assurance going on for some of that side. You know how this works, so it's not an issue for you to get through it.
And that's one of the reasons, like, Ryan Bloom was he was yelling at us on Twitter, like, you guys triggering me with all this Sonic criticism. I was like, but that's the thing, when you're somebody who's like incredibly well immersed in this and you've memorized this and you have this game down pat, you're not going to be the same as somebody who's taken a number of years off from it. It's like, okay, what does this do again?
It's almost Dota like, you know, or League of Legends. Like, it's one of those games where the people who understand it, it's the easiest thing in the world to them. It's simple. Why don't you get it the first time through? But if you don't understand it, it's foreign. I have no idea what I'm supposed to do here. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. And in a single player game, especially when you're stuck in like the mid 90s and you don't have an internet to go to, you can just be stuck there for weeks at end. And just move on to a different video game if you're lucky enough to have money.
I can't remember when and where I figured out the drum. It was, I think my friend figured it out and I didn't believe him, so I had to go over and like watch him do it.
Dude, you just hold up and down. That's all you do, dude.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, what drum? Why are you having difficulties with? There's a drum? Yeah. They probably don't even know what you're talking about.
I did once impress a girl because she could not beat the, what was it, Marble Garden boss fight where Tails lifts you up. So I beat that for her. So that's Sonic 3 got me a kiss on the cheek.
Ooh.
Nice.
So best game ever, I think.
Probably, yeah.
We can so totally beating agree. Sonic 2006 probably.
Okay, we won't talk about what that got me.
All right. Nothing.
We'll be $1,000, I guess, for Red Cross.
For charity. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah. Belita, do you have a
choice yet? So we're gonna put my pick is next. We're gonna put it on hold until next week. Imran's gonna be out and we rushed this one in a week, so we'll take a time, pick a good pick. And yeah, we'll announce that when we have it, when we know it, when it's been figured.
You just haven't figured anything out, have you?
Well, no, I mean, I'm leaning towards maybe Shelter.
Okay, I could do that.
Yeah. Maybe. I'll see. I might have one other option. But
we'll get all parental.
But it'll probably be CSGO.
Yeah. All right, guys. Litter's Book Club, Counter-Strike Go.
Everyone has to get a $40 drop before we
can be on it. That's a perk, man. You don't have to. That's just a perk if you happen to get that. All right. I guess let's take a break.
Break.
We'll
break.
Come back short time. We're back, and Imran is Naxaraximus.
What? Huh?
Are you Naxara? Are you the guy?
I'm playing that card game that people have been talking about.
Are you playing
about
that card game?
I can't. So I can participate in discussion on this podcast now.
Nice.
Well, I started playing the game because everyone's playing it, so I figured, what the hell?
Everyone's not playing. I'm not playing it, Imran. Am I playing?
Well, you're only playing CS:GO.
You will.
No,
play it.
I am. I've only played 4 hours of Counter-Strike Go this last week.
Only four.
That's like 20 games.
There's no reason not to play it because it's free.
This is true.
But so we've all talked about the Hearthstone mechanics and all that, so not going to go into that. But I find the actual art style and voice is really grating.
It's a traditional Blizzard art style, and I think the main issue is like Blizzard's
art. I don't know if it's traditional. It's more World of Warcraft, and
yeah,
that's traditional for, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it is now, because, I mean, they started off with Diablo, but now it's Blizzard's art style. And, like, the rest of the industry just took over that same art style, so it seems boring and generic, when this is how World of Warcraft looks, and Warcraft has been part of gaming culture for so long.
Did you see those smoking hot new Tauren models?
No, I did not. Again, find these smoking hot.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they felt the need to, like, hey, here's the new Tauren model in a bikini.
Well, that's terrific. Just it.
Well, that's Blizzard
underwear. So that's
no, awesome. I know.
That's part of the problem I have with the Hearthstone. It's like, here's this character, by the way. Here's this, like, massive cleavage she's sporting in her character or her hero art.
Yeah.
Like, and then there's only two female characters, which maybe I should be grateful for, considering the first one, but I don't know. So,
a lot of the art is weird because this started off as a different game. Like, there was actually a physical World of Warcraft card game. So a lot of the artwork you see inside Hearthstone was stuff that they just appropriated from the card game. I know it doesn't excuse it, but that's why it looks a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. But, like, the voices, like, the weird thing, every time you end your turn, it's like some saying, like, job's done. And I'm like, stop saying this now.
That's the guy. That's the peasant.
That's the orc. That's the orc.
The orc. The characters that are making, like, very close to pop culture references when you're, like, playing cards. I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head, but I know I heard something that was like, this is really way too close to something that, like, exists. From like a commercial or a song or something.
There's entirely possible it sounds way too close to something exists because it's because it's Warcraft.
So you say this, but like my first interaction with any of this stuff is Hearthstone.
Yeah.
So playing this, I'm like, wow, this is really super annoying.
Well, but you have to remember, this is a game that's been around for World of Warcraft. It's been around for 7 years and to a certain degree has worked its way into the social consciousness of like probably 30 million people. So there are probably things that sound familiar from places, and those people were actually cribbing it from Blizzard.
Well, I even know about the orc from Warcraft who says, "Stop poking me!"
God, I wish that was in there now. Fuck! Like, you keep clicking on it. Yeah, damn it.
Yeah, but how are you finding the actual play mechanics? I mean, we've discussed the mechanics at length, but the playing of the game.
I was really in. I was enjoying the game. Until, like, I'm very bad at it. Mm-hmm. So I've been banging my head against the Paladin for a while. And it seems like every time I'm just about to beat him, he'll just summon, like... So I have trouble with getting enough monsters on the field, or minions on the field, to deal with the fact that he just summons, like, one of those guards every time.
One guy every... Yeah.
Yeah. So by the end, he'll have like 7, and he'll have like 5 health, and I'll have like 20. Then he'll take off that 20 health in like one turn.
Yeah, so you're using you which character are you using?
Yeah,
I've been rotating around to try different ones, but I've tried him with the magician girl that you get first, the rogue, and the warrior. And each time I've lost. Again, it's probably one of those things where like I assume that, oh, I have a life lead, so I'm probably going to do this well, and I can just ignore those minions. But then it's maybe luck of the draw or like mana capability. So the problem I have with Hearthstone ultimately is that I feel like the basic cards you get are shit.
They're not shit. They're the basic voting blocks of stuff you're going to use later.
They're mediocre.
Like, I played one game online, and it was a dude that had really low cost mana cards for that had way too high stats and like taunt and stuff. Yeah. It's like, this is, you clearly bought this, and that puts me at a disadvantage.
Well, he may not have bought it, but I mean, he may just be in the same place as you. A lot of people don't level very high because they just want to hang out and get easy wins. But yeah, I mean, he definitely could have purchased some packs and got that stuff. But
where that game, like where that meets of where like, oh, well, here's the free to play aspect, or maybe it's just the randomness aspect, like in my face, I'm like, oh, well, I'm way less interested in being competitive in this game now.
Yeah, that's the nature of most free to play beasts.
Right. Yeah. Like, well, you compare it to, say, Dota or CSGO, which, I mean, maybe not fair because they're both Valve games, but everything you buy in that game is useless.
Yeah, well, it's like, right, well, also, like, everything you do in Dota is going to be based entirely on, like, your skill at the actual video game. Like, the entire problem with something like a card game is it's inherently luck-based. I mean, if you get the perfect draw and your opponent gets the perfectly wrong draw, you can always beat them. I mean, you always get a chance. You know the mechanics.
And Hearthstone came out short, like, I don't know, maybe a year after my first venture into playing a Magic game, which was the digital version that my brother had gifted to me. Yeah. And that was my one issue with this. Like, well, fuck, you know, I've built this deck. These are the cards I want. But it's a fucking crapshoot on if I'm going to get any of the cards when I need them or when I want them. And that's always been my issue with games like this.
Yeah, there's a level of chance involved, but I mean,
Which is fine. I mean, that adds, you know, some of the excitement. Yeah, the little guy can beat the big guy if the big guy doesn't get the cards he wants.
I mean, Hearthstone goes a step further in simplifying the game than Magic by actually taking the land drawing out of it. You're going to get a set amount of mana.
Thank God for that.
Every turn, right? You're going to go up by one every turn, and you can build your deck accordingly. And as you get into the sort of meta of the game and the more advanced tactics, you start building a curve of mana. You know, you have an early game, you have a mid game, you have a late game, you have those plans, you know when to throw cards back in your initial hand if they're not right for your, you know, when I
So draw, that may be my problem so far is that I've done no deck construction whatsoever.
I mean, it's something you basically have to do.
The default mage deck is good. Like I like the default mage deck. I mean, there are spells that you're unlocking as a mage that you should be adding to the deck, but the basic creature set, what they call the neutral commons, so all the non-hero specific cards, so things that can be put in any deck, they're all valuable. They have value in that most of them have decent stats, all the ones you get initially, and they have basic simple abilities.
You'll find those cards in like every tournament deck.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy online named Trump who has taken that default mage deck with very few additions all the way to legend rank.
He's a good player.
Yeah,
he's done that. He's done that with like Warlock, and he's doing it right now with Rogue. The issue is like you have like the 99th percentile of like Hearthstone players, and a guy like Trump is playing like 8 hours a day every single day. Yeah. So I mean, you're never going to get to that level probably, but it can be done.
First name Trump.
Why not? Just Trump SC. He was completely oblivious to the whole Donald Trump thing when he did this. He started off with StarCraft. I'm sure he would have picked a different name if he had known he got a horrible racist misogynist. But the big issue with like a card game is understanding concepts behind a card game. Like you need to understand card advantage and you need to understand tempo.
Yeah, I've never played a card game before.
Yeah.
That's probably important.
The base mechanics of a card game are terribly important to understand, even just building a deck.
Building games specifically. Yeah. There are plenty of other card games that.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm not going to defend it to someone who doesn't enjoy the mechanics of it. Give it a little bit of a chance. See if the mechanics grow on you. And if you want some one-on-one stuff,
Fine, I'll install it again.
I can show you, you know, I can show you some decks. I can point you to some resources online that will just straight up give you value, easy, low cost, basically right. free decks.
There are plenty of sites that have like, you know, hey, here's my deck. It's called Green Destruction or whatever, and it'll say,
yeah, all right, exactly.
So it's three of these cards for these kills, and that's what I've done when I, you know, when I was playing Magic, because I didn't quite grasp, you know, building my own quite yet. So that those are good resources to delve into.
But that's,
yeah, I imagine this is how like people feel when like I'm saying like, oh, fighting Street Fighter's not that hard. Like,
yeah,
I got into it with everybody else or all my friends at the same time, and so we all learned together. But now I'm like, I'm way behind on this. So the distance between where I am and getting competitive with everyone else is way more intimidating than I thought it would be.
Yeah, yeah, I faced the same problem with my circle of friends, like physical circle of friends and like Magic the Gatherings. Like, you know, not to brag or anything, but like I'm really into this game. I'm like, understand it better, and I want to go to tournaments. And for that fact, I can no longer compete with you guys. And that sucks because you guys are my friends. I actually hang out with you every single day, but I'm better than you at this. And you're going to hate me that I'm so much better at you than this.
But yeah, right, so, if the mechanics resonate with you at all, then that's the hook, and we can build from that. If they don't resonate with you, then there's no reason to keep playing the game.
I enjoy the mechanics. I've been enjoying the actual act of playing the game. It's just been like that one part, like playing that one guy. It's like, all right, I'm not going to competitive until I beat normal and beat this fucking paladin.
Get some cards and yeah.
So I'm nearing the end of Xenoblade as well.
See, I'm utterly flabbergasted by that. How many hours do you have put into it now?
80.
Jesus, where do you get that much time?
I don't know that as an
active account. You don't get that question, Matt.
I leave it on and like I go do other things, so I'm not sure it's really like pretty accurate account. But I've been doing like pretty much every side quest I see, so I don't. Maybe I just do things faster. I think part of what's speeding this up is that whenever I have any bit of trouble, I go, all right, Xenoblade Wiki. Try to figure out who the fuck this person was I got to turn this quest into.
Yeah.
Does it not have like a journal or anything just telling you where to
keep track of it? It does, but I don't want to go searching through it.
Yeah.
Because just turning to the side and looking up or typing in a name is easier. Mm. And the last leg of this game, what I assume to be the last leg, I'm told there's probably more after this, is that it's so samey. I've been going through the Mechanis for a long time.
Samesies.
And it's, what now?
No, I said samesies.
Samesies, yeah. And it just, I've kind of lost the will to go forward because it's like, oh, this is more factory and more robots and more, nah. So we'll see. I'll probably try and make a struggle to finish that game before I go on vacation. So before I come back in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I haven't been playing any games aside from Hearthstone and Sonic & Knuckles. However, my 360 is dead. I saw footage of Bayonetta 2 at the Nintendo stream at San Diego Comic Con. I have got to get a Wii U as soon as possible.
Oh yeah.
God damn it. So
just
I'm looking
one.
For. I know as soon as I buy, like, if I go out to Toys R Us today and just buy one or Best Buy or whatever, like, tomorrow it's going to go to, like, $200. I know how this fucking works.
Then you're going to buy one. $200 that have been pretty good. Like, they're basically brand new units.
I should. I don't trust that idea, but yeah, you're right.
I mean, they're refurbed from Nintendo, which are always pretty good.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, nothing is going to come out on, like, any other consoles, like, this year, I guess. Unless, like, you talk about. So,
The biggest fervor right now is over a beta and a game that was released last year.
Yeah.
So John Romero says PC gaming is going to make you his bitch.
He said that before. I recall it not working out well.
Oh, fuck, you're right.
I thought this Carmack that opened up his mouth this time. Was it Romero?
It was Romero.
Romero.
Thank God for John Romero.
Look at that floating hair.
So, yeah. So,
just do it. Just shut up. Stop bitching about it. Just do it.
Damn it. I hate Nintendo. Right. I hate everything. Yes, I do. I hate that they're doing this to me.
Old rivalries.
Yeah. It's just been broadcast about old Sega rivalries.
Yeah, but the times, Mark.
And it's funny because like you have all these old Sega feelings and you spent most of the day like trashing Sonic & Knuckles.
Yes.
The preeminent Sega Genesis game.
preeminent.
I don't know if it's the preeminent Sega Genesis.
I would say it is when people think of the Sega Genesis, they think of games like Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
No, I don't think
well, they think of Sonic.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think they think of Sonic 2. Yeah.
I don't know. I've actually never looked at sales data for early Sonic games. I feel like Sonic 3 is probably the best selling of those.
Well,
like the most
popular. It's weird because, of course, pack-in. Sonic 1 and 2 were pack-ins. So it's one of those things. I think it's actually top 10. Sonic 3's top 10 all-time Genesis. But because 1 and 2 were pack-ins, like 1 has like 100 million, 150 million carts or something. Like it's way in the lead.
Definitive Genesis game was Balls 3D Fighting. I'm just saying.
Totally. Yeah.
Rise of the Robots.
The what?
Rise of the Robots? You don't play that? It's so fucking terrible.
No, I'm thinking about Cyborg Justice.
We should totally just play like really bad Genesis games from now on. That should be the new IBC.
Just kidding. All right.
There's enough of them to go around.
Zing.
All right. So I have been playing The Last Door, which is a point and click adventure, very much old school. You get your little items along the bottom. It has a total of four episodes. They're relatively short, probably like half an hour or 40 minutes long. And it's really good. It's sort of, I don't know, I guess H.P. Lovecraft-esque. So there are hints of unknown horrors, and it takes place in Victorian England. And the presentation is very, very, very lo-fi, chunky pixel art, but it's beautiful. Yeah. It's very, I mean, they make great use of every single, you know, pixel rendered on the screen, so it's kind of chunky pixels, but I'm really, really enjoying it. There have just been some heart pounding moments, you know, where like I left a room and I come back in and it's just full of crows that are just staring at me, like my the hair on my chest is sort of tingling, just like relaying that moment that I played. So I just finished the second episode, and it's really good. It's only $10. I'm really, really enjoying it. I got it from a recommendation from David Marchmont, who's been on the cast before, one of our British friends. And so I'm glad I took his recommendation of it. And I recommend it to you all. So I've been playing that. I started finally there's a 4-player co-op mod for Divinity Original Sin. So I started up a game last night with my brother and my friend Steve. And we all made characters with varying colors of giant afros. So we're doing that.
It's all those bad afros.
Yeah.
How much of like an old of a D&D campaign does that feel like?
It's really good. I would say it maybe feels a lot like Ultima 7.
Okay.
And that's good. Like there's a ton of shit that you can do, and just like everyone you can talk to, you can barter with everyone. It's very good, very open ended. And then finally I pulled the trigger on Frozen End Zone. Well, it used to be called Frozen End Zone. Dave and I have talked about this on the cast before.
Is it a Frozen or Disney's Frozen football game?
Yes, you're right.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it is now
called, do you get lose points for letting it go?
It is now called, you son of a bitch. It is now called Frozen Cortex. The guy changed the name, and that kind of, I was like, okay, cool. I mean, not that that was the barrier of entry, but so I pulled the trigger on that. Two copies for $25, gave one of the copies to Dave because he had brought me in with an early beta key to play it. And so I've put about 4 or 5 hours into it, and it's still such a good, I really, 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 really like this game. So I've had some really amazing matches, and actually it saves them all. Like you can load other people's matches, so I may have to pull some of those out and put them up on YouTube or something. I like Frozen Cortex a lot. So I hope Dave and I have eight games that we want to play together.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that one's so good because it's a simultaneous turn based. You take a turn, I take a turn. Right. Like I can come back to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I'm on my lunch hour. Okay. Hey, Brian took a turn. Here we go. Boom. Yeah.
So you can just like start 10 games with random people. And then, you know, as the turns come back, you can just load them up, take your time. It's set up like Frozen Synapse in that you can sort of act out the turns before you actually hit go on it. So, you know, you can say, all right, well, what if his guys run over here? So, yep, that's it for me. On to whoever's left, Dave, I guess. And then Matt.
Sure. Yeah. I'm pretty simple this week. I've only really been playing halfway.
Oh man. God.
I play a lot of games halfway. Yeah.
Yeah.
I usually get about 3/4 through
before you give up.
Yeah. That looks really good. I try to get one of the keys that, Starbound/Chucklefish was given away today, But yeah. I thought I was the fucking fastest person in the world. But nope, there's somebody else who's faster than me.
No. But yeah, it's really great. I've been following it for almost a year. I did a show on my YouTube channel, which is coming back, called Devlogged, where I look at development logs and kind of just report on them. Hey, here's a game that you might like. Follow its development. And I did one on this in October of last year.
Yeah, that was one of my first introduction to the game.
It looked great. It's a 2D pixel art XCOM. Basically is the easiest way that'll put a specific picture in your head. That's pretty much what it is. It's squad-based, turn-based, tactical, and it's a little more story-focused than an XCOM. And you play a group of guys who wake up on a ship, and they don't know what's going on, and you have to make your way through the ship, slowly figuring out and putting together exactly what's happened. So basically you're on the first ship that's been using jump technology, faster-than-light drives, and they finally figure out this isn't good. Something's going on. Weird stuff's happening. Ships are disappearing, and you're the first ship that disappeared, basically, from the faster than light stuff. And it's really cool. It's nice, tactical. It's lighter, a little bit lighter than XCOM. It's just not quite as dire. There's actually a point in the game where they say, like, yeah, I got this chip I invented that if you die, it just teleports you back to the base, so you don't really die. So you don't have to do any save scumming or anything to keep your guys alive, because it's all, everybody is a character. Like, there's no this expendable, you know, John Mafuntu or anything. There's no randomly generated characters. But it's a modest game that is really, really fun if you like that sort of tactical shooter mixed with a little bit of Aliens-esque sort of in this big ship and you don't really know what's going on, sci-fi mystery solving, I guess.
Sounds outstanding.
Huge recommendation. I'll eventually cover it on my channel, but right now I'm just trying to put like 10 or 15 hours into it before I finally pull the trigger on a video.
So Dave, speaking of space indie games, I figured you're the one to ask about this. Have you heard anything about, what was it, Gods Will Be Watching?
Heard, yeah. I saw it at PAX. The line was always too long every time I saw it. But other than that, yeah, I haven't heard a whole lot. It's some kind of procedural.
I saw a video
thing.
And it looks great. Like it's apparently like the first thing is you're holding hostages and you have to like find a way to make them like not freak out and try to bolt or not get so comfortable that they feel like they can take you out.
Yeah.
And then there's a torture scene. It looks like, this sounds terrible, but it looks really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It's been on my radar, but it's been one of those games where it was also on a lot of other people's radar. And I was like, you know, big YouTubers are going to cover that. Like, I think Jesse Cox and like Northern Lion and like really big guys are covering it. And I was like, do I want to put my eggs in that basket? Probably not. Like, they're going to get their due. Let me focus on, you know, something that's a little more below the sight line of most people, but it's a game I want to play in my personal time for sure. Cause it looks amazing, but I've kind of kept my knowledge of it to a minimum. I haven't really delved into it too far.
All right, Matt.
So I've been playing a bunch of Shenmue.
How's that going?
I just finished up the second disc, and I believe it or not, I played Shenmue with my daughter, who doesn't remember, she's 2.5 years old. She actually enjoyed it a bunch.
Yeah, it's the right pace for a tiny child.
Well, the thing is, you'd think she'd be
fake Shenmue pace.
She does love like watching Mario and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But what she loved about Shenmue was making me open every drawer and cabinet to see what's inside. Like, she was obsessed. What's in this one?
What's in this one? Oh, so you're down to play games like I do.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
So you can never, ever like let her watch you play Skyrim.
This is the part of the story where you had to like look for the Phoenix Mirror or any like clues for it. So I was going to look around the house anyway.
Is she going to start walking around going, Dada, lucky hit?
No.
No. Want to play a game of lucky hit?
No.
She's going to really fear Chinese people, though.
I can't read Chinese. Talks to 10 people who can read Chinese. Doesn't ask them to decode the scroll. Shenmue.
Yep.
I think that's really unfair, though, because that game works so well so much of the time that it's only those like moments where something small doesn't make sense, and then the whole thing just unravels.
That's right. You were posting, I think it was you, a screenshot earlier today, just like talking about the textures and stuff in the game, right?
Maybe, don't know if I was.
No. Somebody else posted a screenshot of Shenmue, or no, maybe it was something else. Maybe it was Ryan Bloom. Anyways.
Your Shenmue Twitter alert has fooled you again.
I'm actually a Shenmue Twitter bot. I'm sorry.
And I remember when I got super jazzed because I didn't play Shenmue 2. And I someday maybe I should actually go and do that. But finding a way to play it is incredibly difficult. But I remember Shenmue Online because that trailer got me like incredible. Because Shenmue seems like it would totally lend itself to an online game. And at that time, I thought, you know, that would make a complete amount of sense. And now when I think about it, that game would have been fucking awful. Like, there's no... That game would have just been, like, Second Life, but fighting.
Second Life, but with Sonic.
As I understand it. Also
Second Life.
I haven't played Shenmue too much either, but as I understand it, it's far less of a home simulator, you know, than you actually do stuff.
It's very strange that Sega never tried to recapitalize on Shenmue. Like, not, like, relaunch it, but, I mean, just port the games to XBLA or something.
Yeah.
Like, getting access to Shenmue 2 is surprisingly difficult.
I'm lucky in that I have a working Dreamcast, and I have a friend who has the European edition that I might be able to ask to borrow. But other than that, no, I don't think I'd ever be able to play it.
What are you saying, Mark?
I just like Sega weirdly like undervalues and overvalues the strangest properties they have. It's like there's vast swaths of their back catalog that either they're not aware that they own or they would rather people just forget about entirely, despite being beloved. So
well, with Shenmue, I think the problem is that if they acknowledge 1 and 2 and that they have any value, everybody's going to ask, well, where's Shenmue 3? And that's probably not actually developed in any way.
There was a thing Yu Suzuki was giving a speech somewhere, and like one of his slides was just the number 3 in Shenmue font. So maybe, who knows? Like, that would be the kind of thing that I could see Sega doing, like, in a very small scale. You know what would be hilarious? If they're like, Shenmue 3, developed by Telltale Games, and then just everyone just riots.
Well, the sad thing is that Shenmue was a massive undertaking at the time.
Yeah, $100 million, I think, was the cost.
But now... That scale of game with modern tools and technology and techniques,
it'll be probably, a twine game.
Yeah, it probably isn't all that difficult for them to make another Shenmue game. You just take, if you can port the engines for 1 and 2 and then sell 1 and 2 and make up the money from porting, then you could probably develop 3 in not very much time at all.
Shenmue. I feel like their problem is going to be one of expectations that people are expecting Shenmue 3 to be what Shenmue 1 was in its time. And that is a $100 million game, and that's a game nobody wants to invest in.
Oh, no, I'm expecting Shenmue 3 to be, like, the end of 2001 A Space Odyssey. I'm kind of expecting, like, if you ever get that game, you're going to pop it in after playing 1 and 2, which were very good, and then it's just going to be, like, balls-to-the-wall stupidity. Like, nonsense all the way through.
I will say, I think Yakuza is better than Shenmue. I think they should, like, if they ever make another Shenmue game, just take that Yakuza engine and, like,
well, I think that's probably the problem. It's like, it makes no sense to have Shenmue and Yakuza.
Like, yeah, but if they're not bringing Yakuza games here, we might as well get something.
Yeah, Sega doesn't... Well, it's another thing Sega is weird about valuing. They don't know what games they should bring to America and what games that should be left alone. So.
At the very least, Shenmue is important for how very singular it is. And it's really ridiculous that Sega has the code base and they have all of the original source files and
they lost so much money, just they can make some of it back.
Yeah, like if they just took all of that and they if they could develop a port, at least it wouldn't be lost to time. Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Who would you like to see develop a new Shenmue game?
Well, I don't even need them to develop a new Shenmue game. I'm more interested in making sure that they don't let Shenmue 1 and 2 just become games that you can't play unless you find a working Xbox or Dreamcast.
Yeah,
I can't think of any non-joke answers, so my initial thought was Kojima.
Like, when you said previously, like, I was going to say Traveler's Tales, the other fucking one, the guys Telltale, yeah. That actually wouldn't be terrible.
Yeah, I mean, like, if they would make a decent end to the Shenmue story, I don't think they'd make a decent Shenmue game.
Well, yeah, they'd treat it with the respect.
They would make a good game. They would make a good story. They would treat it with respect, but it wouldn't be Shenmue because they would probably never devote the resources into like filling every drawer with stuff to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess maybe Rockstar could, like, the thing is, like, if Rockstar could do it, but it, like, the problem would be, like, keeping Rockstar away from their usual excesses.
Yeah. So. This is a part where Rio drives a Lamborghini off a cliff.
With a scantily clad busty lady.
Yeah.
See, the problem is, like, when you make, if you're going to make a Shenmue game like Shenmue was for the Dreamcast, you have to commit to the idea that it's not going to be, you're not going to make your money back.
Yeah.
And that's, like, no one's going to do that. Like, I was playing Xenoblade, I was looking at, like, Xenoblade stuff, and I saw a Game Informer thing of the guy saying, like, this game deserves better than what Nintendo gave it for the, in terms of Wii hardware. And then I saw a Rock Paper Shotgun response to that was, this game wouldn't have existed if it weren't for Wii hardware. Yeah. Which means that, like, I look at Xenoblade Chronicles X, God, what are they calling that game now?
Yeah,
that,
Xenoblade Chronicles X.
It's a really unwieldy name.
Yeah.
And it seems to have the same scale as Xenoblade, but I can totally see that Nintendo is going to be like, wow, we spent a shitload of money on this. And what are we how are we going to make this back?
Well, Xenoblade Chronicles X builds off of what Chronicles did with instancing and procedurally generated stuff instead of spending a century building your world. But yeah, just the increase in fidelity in that game must have taken forever for them to build all those art assets.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, Nintendo's a huge publisher, and despite problems, they have a ton of money, and Sega's not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles, it's one of those things where it's like, if the hardware wasn't so limited, they wouldn't have made a world where everything was so simplified to the point of being procedurally generated.
Right. Yeah, I don't... If there's a Shenmue 3, I don't think it's going to take the same form that everyone thinks it is. And there's a lot of people clamoring for that Shenmue 3.
First-person shooter, John Carmack. John Romero. Done.
You know, I'd be happy...
Make Ryo his bitch.
I would be happy if they could just, like, put Shenmue 1 and 2 into some sort of durable, archivable format, and then release that as though it were a museum piece. And yeah. Maybe... You know, some notes on the script of what the ending would have been if they ever got
the Sega Museum Collection.
Because at this point, it's not just that Shenmue was a good game. It's that it's notable.
Yeah, it has significance within the pantheon of video games, and it shouldn't be lost to history.
Yeah.
We need a series starring Neil deGrasse Tyson, but instead of talking about the universe, he's talking about video games.
Shenmue.
I'd watch that.
I would watch that.
Let's hire Neil deGrasse Tyson for this podcast.
Neil deGrasse Tyson would definitely
be on the next podcast.
They'd probably spend more on effects shots for a series like that than you would to develop Shenmue 3.
Probably.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.
See you.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Fuck Sendopolis.